Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Troy Noons is an Absolute Podcast. Syracuse sports make me drink. I'm your host, John Casillo, and with me, as always, is Dan Lyons.
Hello, everyone. Happy we're in the middle of the hell stretch of Syracuse basketball week.
We are, yes, very much in the middle of it. The first edition did not go well.
No, we've replayed that game a couple times now, and it hasn't gotten better.
No,
from the Florida State edition and the, what's the other game that was just like that?
The Virginia Tech game, which...
Yes, similar. Like, you know, the fall behind early... have like a somewhat interesting comeback, get some hope, and then immediately give up like a 12-0 run that puts you out of it. Not the best script. I'd rather like test out some other episode types.
Yeah, like anything with those really. This week we decided that don't record during a Wednesday game and see what happens. We've seen varying ends of what can occur when we record during a game. So this week we are not. We're recording on Monday. That should give us a different perspective. We'll be talking a little bit about the Louisville game, but I know that over on Unpeeling Syracuse Basketball with Bobby and Dylan, I know that they both talked a little bit about that, a little bit about Duke. We're going to talk about those games a little bit more, but in a different way. Also taking some questions this week, and as always, talking about beer, football, and all the other stuff. So starting off, Dan, we've struggled mightily against Louisville. All-time, an all-time 9-18 record. That is SU's worst winning percentage against any team they faced at least 20 times.
Yeah, it's not great, and it's also not that surprising because even while, like, we have our struggles with Pitt, we also had a long stretch of time where Pitt was bad in the Big East, so we got to beat up on them for years. While Louisville, when they joined our conference, they were already, I think Pitino was already the coach there, and they're already, like, a good program. Obviously, they were, like, technically a mid-major before that, but like they were they had Denny Crum, they had like a history behind them, they're in a basketball praised state. So the fact that we had to then start playing them every year when you had like, you know, aside from all the you know nonsense that went on during his coaching tenure, like an all-time great coach at Pitino, a good recruiter, it just and someone whose style was very good at he was good at like countering what Boeheim does. Yeah, it's not terribly surprising that our all-time record is worse against him. We've had a little more success recently, and hopefully that'll continue, although Louisville does look pretty good this year. Granted, they've kind of been on their heels the last couple of weeks, so hopefully we take advantage of that.
Yeah, they look pretty good, and the last three games, not so much, but I feel like they're still a very good team. Chris Mack's obviously a very good coach. I think they're just getting to kind of the start of what they can be under Mack. Like, Mack did a really good job with, you know, sub top 30 recruiting at Xavier, turn them into a program vying for, you know, top four seeds every year. They were a one seed recently, like I think last year actually. So I think like Chris Mack took the Xavier train as far as that would go. And now with Louisville, I think he's got a chance to, you know, make them just as much of a power as they were under Pitino. If there's any time we were going to catch him and the team napping, though, this seems like it's it. Not because they're not focused, but just because you had obviously the collapse against Duke, the fact that they really struggled with Clemson for much of the game, much of their last game, and losing to Florida State as well. They're definitely not playing their best basketball of late. So that's something I'm very hopeful for because, you know, the record's around the same, but Louisville's resume is much, much better than ours. And they're definitely vying for a top four seed. So I'd very much like to pick up this win and then maybe not completely lay bubble concerns to rest, but lay most of them to rest.
Yeah, I think with a Louisville win, I think you just have to really hold serve otherwise. And honestly, maybe just not lose to both Clemson and Wake, and you'd probably be okay. Because Louisville, I do think, will right the ship, and they will look like a really, really good win going forward if we pick it up. That's obviously been very much easier said than done, given how Syracuse has played as of late, although both of these teams are kind of limping and could really use a righting of the ship, I'd say. So hopefully it's us. Hopefully we get back to like the strong dome performance we had seen earlier in the year, unlike these last couple blown crazy giving up these giant runs, which is new. It seems like something that we've really been doing more as of late. Obviously, like Duke did it early, but we were able to claw back. This is just like we've been giving up like one early, fall behind, we stretch back through some, you know, various different things. Like this past game, it was that weird lineup we were running out there with Jalen Carey, who I thought played really well in his first extended minutes in a while. Robert Braswell for the first time, and I can't remember the last time he played meaningful minutes. And they played great, and then started the second half, and the team just got the doors blown off again. So with how, you know, Louisville has some players. They're more talented, I'd say, than either Florida State or NC State, which is scary. And you just can't give up that. Like, you have to find a way to right the ship earlier and not let the team get away from you, and that's what this team has struggled with as of late.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the fact that how many points did Hughes, Battle, and Brissett end up with in the last game? I don't have the box score in front of me, but I know it was low. And Syracuse needs at least, I think, two of those three to score 10 or more in a game. And like, it was great to see Frank Howard be able to pick up some of the slack there. Dolezal obviously having a nice 10-point game, but at the same time, like, Frank had some turnovers. And really, like, Frank's still not 100%, I wouldn't think. So having him kind of be your leading scorer isn't exactly ideal. And it's something that, you know, gets caused from kind of how teams are defending us lately, where you're seeing everybody else really get pressured by the opposing defense. And then saying to Frank Gallagher, you're like, Frank, you know, if you guys are going to score, Frank's going to have to beat us. And, you know, last year, maybe that Frank Howard could potentially, you know, rise to the occasion there and force defenses to rethink their strategy. Unfortunately, I still don't think he's 100% healthy here. So I would not necessarily bank on Frank being able to do that, at least not consistently. And obviously, like, the more he becomes a primary ball handler, a primary scorer, the more likely turnovers and go up with usage rate. To go back to my initial point, Hughes had 6, Brissett had 2, and Battle had 7, so that's 15 combined points for the team's 3 leading scorers. That's not sustainable against any opponent, but especially against, you know, kind of a peer opponent with about equal talent like NC State was, especially on the road. But really, like, that sort of effort wouldn't have flown at home either.
Yeah, it's been a rough stretch because I don't think Tyus has played great every week, which we had come to expect. He you know, really struggled in his pit, but we were able to do enough without him that we got picked up the win. But then after two decent games, and it's Florida State and BC, where he, especially in that Florida State game, he was like the only guy going. In this one, and it's NC State, like 7 points, we're just not going to win very many games against decent opponents. You can outlast a pretty mediocre Pitt team. You are not going to beat even a team the caliber of NC State when they're playing relatively well with Tyus hitting 7. But I think for the most part, like, I trust that he will rebound, even if, like, we've seen more of those bad games from him as of late. But the Elijah Hughes thing, I think, is the most concerning. He was so consistent to start this season. He was averaging, you know, you can pretty much count on him for, like, 12 to 18 points every night. And if you look at the game log, through the first, like, basically the first 3 months of the season, he was in the double digits all but maybe 3 or 4 games. And now in the last, looking back to the first Pitt game, has a 22-point game against Miami, the 17 against Florida State, but otherwise it's been single digits or 10 against BC. It's just been a much different player. He's looking for, I think, his shot selection has been more questionable. He's just not hitting threes as of late, which was such a big part of why he, you know, fit right so well into this team at the start of the season and carried us through some stretches. He hasn't hit, I mean, he's only hit more than 2 once in the last, looks like 6 games, and that was the Florida State game where he was like the only guy who was alive. So it's troubling. This team isn't good enough where you can only have, we have one of Battle or Hughes playing well. You need, and then Brissett's like a whole other thing, but you need at least 2 of those guys, like you're saying, playing well, ideally 3. and it's just been strange how inconsistent they've all been, and they've all been like almost struggling off one another. Where, you know, we haven't had, I don't remember the last time we had all three playing well.
Yeah, it's definitely been weird this year. I think consistency is our primary concern, or the lack thereof, all season. You know, whether it's Frank still not really being 100%, Tyus being more efficient in some respects and kind of disappearing in others. Elijah Hughes, obviously. I know Dylan had a great look on Monday at kind of the scouting report on what's gone wrong for him. And you can see like the fact that people are really getting on him on the perimeter, forcing him to bring it inside, stops him from being, you know, the very capable shooter that he is. And I think that that's very concerning. I know we had a similar player like him in some ways in Andrew White a couple years ago, but I do feel like White could create inside the three-point arc, and I feel like Hughes, unfortunately, has been struggling inside from three. But then you also have Brissett, who, you know, Dylan talked about in the article, but it's been talked about elsewhere too. Like, just doesn't have the same focus this year, and doesn't, it seems like a lot of times he's out of position. He still is unable to finish at the rim. You know, we don't need to over belabor some of the points that Dylan made. I know that they made some of these points on their own podcast too, but is worth just pointing out, like, the use is part of it, but it's not necessarily a solo issue. This is a team effort in terms of inconsistency. When you have all four of those guys having kind of hot and cold nights, definitely provides more questions than answers and forces guys like Buddy Boeheim or, you know, Marek Dolezal into like much larger roles than they necessarily should be. And really, like, if we're relying on those two to score 10 or more and in order to get a win, we're in some deeper trouble than we might think.
Yeah, it's nice that they're complimentary players. Obviously, you're going to have a night where Dolezal, you know, goes for 10 and 5 like he did this past game, but that should be, like, on top of having your big stores do what they can do. Even on an off night, you need to be able to rely on those guys to pick you off 15 points. Like, that's what great teams have. Even when their players don't play well, they know they're going to get a baseline of, like, confidence, and then the other guys can come lift them. Marek cannot be the second-best player on the team. He's just not there yet. Hopefully he will be someday. And you made the Andrew White comparison. I do think, you know, White had 4 years before this. So I think we do kind of forget that he was a transfer, but he wasn't a grad transfer. Right. So this is his second year of real college basketball. And the first one came for a pretty moribund ECU program. So this is like really his – this is, I mean, I'm not going to say how tall a freshman, but this is his first time in the show. So I think it's easier to see him, why he would struggle compared to a White who was pretty consistent, because he had played, you know, in the Big Ten for 2 years and – he was at Kansas for a bit. So I do think Hughes will be awesome going forward. I'm incredibly excited to see what he does, you know, in the next 2 years. But this season, unfortunately, he's kind of waned here. And hopefully it's just a slump, because, you know, we do see Syracuse teams do this as of late. We have these, like, four-game slides. This year it's more of like a yo-yoing. We haven't really had a bad losing streak. We've only lost two games in a row twice. Unfortunately, we have a scheduled one here if we don't bounce back with this Louisville Duke UNC stretch all with a couple days apart. So hopefully we snag one of these, because otherwise it's going to get really, really touchy, especially with, like, you know, I don't think Wake's very good. I think on paper, there's no reason we should lose to Wake, even on the road.
They might fire Danny Manning, and then suddenly they might be motivated.
Yeah, you have no idea what's going to happen in a road game. Even with this team having played well on the road earlier in the year, they could be a total mess at that point, or Wake could be really fired up to play for something. And none of those games are gimmies. Same with at Clemson. Like, they gave us a pretty decent game earlier. We just saw them very close to beating Louisville. They're a tough team. They've played really well as of late. So you can't just, like, mark those things down as wins either way, even if on paper they look like they should be pretty solid opportunities at least.
Yeah, Dan, why do you think that so many fans are seemingly, like, all in on Syracuse getting into the tournament right now? I know I've seen a lot of opinions that as long as they go 2-4 to end the season, because I wrote that article last week about them ending the season 2-4. Like, as long as they go 2-4 to end the season, that they'll be in. I think a lot of people are betting on 2-4 because they're super confident in that. Like you said, neither Wake nor Clemson are gimmies, especially on the road. And if they win any of the other games, then sure, yeah, 2-4 with another win in there against UVA, UNC, Duke, or Louisville should be enough. But, like, I do feel like there's a lot of faith from people that the Duke win is just gonna carry all the water for this team. And I don't want to be so much of a naysayer as much as just a, like, this resume doesn't really add up right now to what the resume did in 2015-16 and what it did last season when we were able to finish on the right side of the bubble, albeit barely.
Yeah, it's definitely, like, you definitely can't pencil it in right now. Without having, like, incredible knowledge of, like, what Arkansas State has done since, there's no guarantee even that Ohio State was over a tournament team. Like, they're really struggling as of late, and I think people, like, remember that being a nice road win in the Big Ten ACC Challenge, and they were ranked really high at the time. They were 16 at the time. They were number one in net rating. Ohio State's not doing well.
No.
The Duke win is really kind of carrying the entire resume. And that's not to say, like, wins over Clemson and Notre Dame and Miami and Pitt don't mean something. They do. I think it's fine for that to be, like, the baseline. But the Duke win's really the only thing popping off the page for us right now, which is concerning. That being said, we have four huge opportunities for them. And part of that's that our schedule is backloaded. But I do think it's strange, considering this team's recent NCAA tournament history, that people aren't a little more spooked about the notion that we could miss the tournament, just because I think it's also part of it that, like, every bracketology pretty much has us in, if not, like, totally safely, at least, like, mostly safely. We're not even in the, like, playing game range anymore. But we could really easily get there if we go 0-3 in these next three. So, yeah, I think it's kind of a, you know, tough spot because, yeah, there's... you know, plenty of opportunity ahead, and I think if the tournament was decided today, we'd be in. But things can fall apart very, very quickly, and I know we've, you know, been somewhat, you know, we've done this a little bit ourselves, but, like, people are kind of overblowing what we've done so far. I will say, like, the one thing is that some of these other wins, these other AC wins, are, like, pretty nice, that we've picked up some double-digit wins here and there. But at the same time, we've gotten blown out multiple times, and as much as Jim Boeheim says that doesn't matter, and I do think, again, he's being disingenuous about that. If the net rating is replacing the RPI, that does matter. You don't want to be blown out. You don't want to lose by more than 10. So the fact that we've done that in our three really bad ACC, actually all four, Georgia Tech as well, ACC losses is not ideal.
I mean, Boeheim understands, I think, what the resume is, and I think he's realistic about, you know, what SU's shot is here. I think that fans have just kind of, like, it's not to, I don't want to crucify the fans here. What I'm just looking to do is level set with everybody that we can't let last year's success and 2016's success make us forget about the year that we didn't make it in the middle of those two and forget how many times SU has been snake bitten. Like, I mean, like, the Final Four run a couple years ago was awesome. Last year's run of the Sweet 16 was great, and we almost got further than that. But the point being that, like, this is sort of becoming the exception, not the rule, for Syracuse basketball. Like, that high level of play is only seems like it's capable in short stretches or in the spots where it's absolutely necessary, and hopefully that comes through again. But, like, just because it's happened before, we've seen that it doesn't always work out for us. And I am worried, like, looking at, like, the most updated bracketology, which we're going to get into here before halftime, SB Nation doesn't have an updated one yet this week, and ESPN doesn't either, but Jerry Palm does. And Jerry Palm over at CBS is one of the more accurate bracketologists out there, and he's got us already down to a 10 seed. So, like, not to say that, you know, that's the end-all be-all, but him having us down to a 10 seed already probably, you know, underlines the point I've been making of, like, we really need to pick up another big win here. If Dan, if you have anything else on that, feel free. Otherwise, we can kind of get into a little bit of guessing against this bracket.
Yeah, no, I think it is just kind of an all or nothing thing where, like, we just really need that second prominent win and then to hold serve on the two road games at the end. And if not, it'll be a tough sell, I think. I think if we get in with like, going 2-4 with the wins at Clemson and at Wake, and we lose the rest of these games, and they're, like, the kind of losses we've been having recently, people are going to have a major issue with our resume.
and rightfully so. Like I said, that there's, you and I said that night about Duke when we won, we said, like, okay, there's a major caveat here that somebody might bring up come selection time, and we really don't know how the committee is going to view this, and we've talked about this ad nauseum, but, like, there's a real possibility that win gets knocked down a peg. And people also forget, like, we have really bad games on the resume. Like, ODU isn't miserable, but it's certainly not great. UConn, not miserable, but certainly not great. Oregon, same deal.
Buffalo hasn't been the buzzsaw we were hoping they would be.
Yeah, Buffalo's also,
like, they're,
like,
good.
Come
they'll
apart.
Make the tournament, but they, like, aren't going to be a top, like, four seed. Like,
no,
it looked like they...
they're going to be seeded around the same place that Ohio State is. And around the same place that we are. Like, And yeah, and Buffalo, like Buffalo's a prime candidate for, like, they haven't played really the same level in like most of their big wins. Like, wasn't one of their big wins against West Virginia earlier this season?
Yeah, that was like first or second week of the season. Yeah, they had the nice West Virginia win. Yeah, and West Virginia's garbage.
Yeah, West Virginia's garbage in the 10-15. So like, there's a lot to think about there. Like, if, and Buffalo hasn't looked great in MAC play, if they lose the MAC tournament, like, they're a bid stealer for us.
Yep. And that's, for two things. One, we're going to have to really root for certain teams. One of those teams is Michael Hopkins' Washington Huskies, because he could do us a real solid by winning the Pac-12 tournament.
Yes.
Because they might be the only bad Pac-12 team that gets in. Two, the flip side is people always bring up a weak bubble. I kind of think we need to reframe the bubble in terms of the bubble always just, it's always going to be weak.
Right. You added four teams.
You added four teams to a thing that was already occasionally weak. So it's kind of annoying when people, and this is like, as a Syracuse fan that's experienced the bubble way too much recently, I think the whole weak bubble thing, like, a dumb talking point. The bubble is weak every single year, so let's not like apologize for getting in on it or not. Like, it is what it is. So I think that thing has been annoying, because like, how many years in a row do we have to talk about the weak bubble? It's been like six. But like you said, there's no guarantees, and we've seen, like, on a year-to-year basis, you do not know what the committee is going to ultimately do, and you can, you know, the talking points are going to be derived from, you know, explaining what they just did. So we've gotten lucky, I think, more often than not in the recent stretch. Obviously, we got screwed a couple times, like, you know, a decade ago, or over a decade ago. God, that's terrifying. But, like, that doesn't mean that we're going to get in because we've gotten in twice, or that we're not going to get in because we, you know, because it's our turn to get screwed out. Like, all we can control is these, you know, what we do in these four ranked team games. And if we win one of those, I feel pretty good about things. But that is easier said than done. And this team has not imbued a ton of confidence with how they've handled these next tier down games in Florida State and NC State. So hopefully this team's just inconsistent and not, like, getting exposed a bit.
Yeah, I would completely agree. So looking at bracketology here before we get to some halftime. Actually, before we do that, a quick break just to hear from one of our sponsors.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And we're back with Bracketology. Dan, if you have the CBS Sports Bracketology link open, we can kind of just do our usual. Go bracket by bracket here. Try not to belabor anything. Just obviously none of this matters until it does.
Sounds good. Sorry for cheating on you this week, Chris, if you are listening.
Yeah, Chris, the only reason why we don't have this up, we don't have yours up, is because of the
because you didn't do it.
You didn't do it. Damn
it's your fault, Chris. Yeah, now I have to like reorient myself to looking at a different bracket.
I like having the logos there. It helps.
I do, yes. Colors and shapes.
Colors and shapes are great. Oh.
All right, I feel pretty good about looking at this. Okay.
All right, so looking at the East first, Washington, D.C., Duke the 1, Michigan State 2, Marquette 3, Texas Tech 4. Give me Duke in a walk out of the top half. And I'm taking the Johnnies out of the bottom half.
Ooh, I don't like the bottom. This feels like a walk for Duke, honestly.
Yeah, this is a joke.
Texas Tech would be interesting because they played them so tough earlier in the year as the 4 seed. Florida State, I think, can get up for them. They played them tough. I don't like the bottom of this bracket. Michigan State is been losing players, and they just haven't been consistent. I'm not going to pick the Johnnies. I don't like any of this.
It's either the Johnnies or Maryland, to be honest.
Yeah, because I've already sold on Marquette, and I don't want to go back on that. I think Auburn might sneakily be one of the talented teams down here, but they haven't played great. I'm going to default to Michigan State. I don't feel good about it at all. This feels like it's going to be like a mayhem region or section of the region, and then Duke's just going to walk through it because none of these teams feel like they're going to give Duke a real challenge.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. Looking at, I guess, number two would be the West in this alignment. So that would be Gonzaga the 1, North Carolina 2, LSU 3, Purdue 4. Give me the Zags up top. Give me UNC at the bottom, and I think the Heels end up getting through here. I think this is an interesting bracket, if only because, like, I think Iowa State could potentially cause some damage. I think Purdue, I don't know just how consistent they've been. Washington could give Gonzaga a real scare, and, like, Washington being out there, the two teams would play, you know, in Salt Lake in the second round. I think that could, you know, really mitigate any sort of Gonzaga home court advantage that they would get. You know, and obviously Salt Lake's not in Washington State, just more the general Western region. I feel like Gonzaga usually has a nice following, but having the only other real, like, Western team with a large fan base out there could potentially mitigate some of that. I don't believe in Nova. I don't believe in Oklahoma. LSU, I'm still really iffy on. So, yeah, I think this kind of sets up really nicely for a 1-2 matchup between the Zags and UNC.
Yeah, I think the Zags are probably my default out of here. I think Washington could give them a really tough game. With the Hops just done a really nice job there. Purdue just hasn't done it this year for me. Like, I expected a lot from them coming into the season. They have players, just hasn't clicked. Nova, I'm just not buying on, which is dumb, but I'm not. I'm gonna go Zags over LSU. I think LSU's really talented. It's really funny. I was talking to someone about this the other day. It's really funny how Shaka Smart, like, became, like, the most hyped coach, like, mid-major coach, maybe since Brad Stevens, other than Brad Stevens, in forever, and has been pretty pedestrian at Texas. Oh, yeah. And Will Wade has turned LSU around in 2 years.
Yeah,
there might be some extracurricular reasons for that, but those are available to Shaka Smart as well.
This is true.
This is college basketball. So, yeah, Will Wade done a really good job at LSU, and they're very talented. And I really wish we had gotten Tremont Waters.
I would agree. So you're going with the Zags. I'm going with UNC here. No surprise. Over in the South, we have Virginia is the one, Kentucky is the two, Houston 3, Iowa 4. I'm taking Virginia in the top half. I'm taking Kentucky in the bottom half, and I'm taking Kentucky to walk through. I actually think Kentucky is going to blow out Virginia in an Elite Eight matchup.
Yeah, I'm in the same spot. Like, Virginia, I think, is just good enough to get by, although I think Buffalo could be interesting. I think Iowa could be interesting.
K-State has some potential.
Yeah, but that in the bottom, Vatek, I think, is solid. Houston's been really good this year. Also for Cincinnati, sounds like a dreadful, dreadful game I don't want to play. I'm taking Kentucky. I've been on them for a couple weeks now. And I just think they're just have a big talent edge over Virginia. What do you talking about Virginia, since there's no more national time to do this? What do you think of the Tony Bennett UCLA rumors?
I mean, I could buy into it. It's just like UCLA will back up the truck because their fan base is extremely, like, pissed at this point about what's befallen this program. But what they don't realize is, like, I guess they're similar to Indiana fans at this point. Like that, you know, crestfallen blue blood, is that, like, you guys aren't what you were, and you coasted too long on, like, reputation, and now you kind of have to, like, start from scratch, and throwing money at the problem doesn't necessarily fix it.
Yeah, UCLA and like, especially with how quickly the turnaround is in college basketball, there are so few four-year players who matter. Like, I think there's a serious brand damage there, and if you're not a Duke or Kentucky where, and this, you know, obviously Syracuse did face this in a little bit. Oh, yeah. Obviously, we have a recent Final Four under our wing, and people notice that. But, like, you have to make a splash very often. Otherwise, it's just, like, no one's going to care about John Wooden or Bobby Knight. Like, it's just not, like, college football, I think you can sell on it a little bit longer. But even there, like, you have to do some brand maintenance. And in college basketball, it's extremely quick. So, the thing with Virginia, with leaving Virginia for me is, like, his whole system has been predicated on getting four-year players, getting guys to buy into the system.
It doesn't work at UCLA.
I know. I don't think it doesn't work at UCLA. They want the flash. And B, I don't think the advantages UCLA affords you are necessarily the ones that Tony Bennett is going to want to utilize. Like, I think he's going to want to do things his way. And I mean, I don't know that UCLA would buy into that. And I don't know if it would be the right move for him to jump. I think there's obviously better jobs in Virginia. But Virginia just lets him do whatever he wants. He could stay there forever. They're going to pay him. It's never going to be an issue. UCLA, like, I just don't know that that's the best match for him. And I don't know if, like, the things that it affords him are really things that he's comfortable with coaching up. Like, he's never going to be a guy who's going to take advantage of one and dones. And I would say this, realizing that we said the same thing about Coach Tay, you know, back when he won the 2010 title. But Coach Tay was always recruiting trying to recruit the best players.
Well, Tay wasn't really recruiting to system the way
right,
that it is. Like, I agree with you. I think that UCLA isn't an exact fit. That said, like, I think that the resources that he'll be afforded at UCLA will outpace most. But at the same,
I do think, like, it would make more sense. Sorry to cut you off. I think it makes more sense to, like, wait for, like, a Kansas if Bill Self implodes, which is possible, given the NCAA stuff.
Right.
Like, I think Kansas, you can go and implement a Virginia-like system there, and it's less of a big deal, because the one-and-dones really haven't worked for them to the level they've worked for other teams. But, like, UCLA, I just don't see it being, like, a cultural fit or whatever. But I could be wrong. Like, money speaks, and he's a very good coach. So I do think he could win there. It just, things would have to be lined up correctly for him.
Well, I think UCLA would prefer to be four-year guys, to be honest.
I think everyone would if they had their druthers.
Oh, yeah.
I just don't know how realistic it is.
Oh, yeah.
And you're betting, you're gambling a lot.
That you are. And I think, I mean, the comparisons, there are some in that you have a historically great program. You have similar academics to UVA. You have probably better access to a local talent base than Virginia does. I'd say maybe, but I'd say you have better access to it because there's fewer local competition, like local teams in competition for it. I think the talent you'll get in the state of Virginia is going to be open to everyone along the Eastern Seaboard, versus out here, there's not as many teams vying for it. And really, to be honest, like right now, the only games in town, you know, for West Coast basketball are Washington, it seems, and Gonzaga. Like, if you're UCLA, like I could understand, like if Tony Bennett is quietly kind of exhausted by the year in year out grind of the ACC, heading out to the Pac-12 is a perfect way to cement yourself a 1 or 2 seed every year. You know, if you're going to recruit that caliber of player, I feel like UCLA fans are different than I think. Like, I've spent enough time with UCLA fans. I've spent enough time at Pauley Pavilion, like that. I kind of get a sense that they're a little bit different than everybody thinks they are as a fan base. They're a very old school fan base. They're a very, they're similar to USC football fans, I guess, in a lot of ways. There's this very older kind of traditional sense of things, and they would much rather flame out in the Sweet 16 or Elite Eight with more 3 and 4 year guys than they would going all in on one and dones. And I feel like that might play to Bennett's strength.
Yeah, it does seem like the donor class is like an outsized, yes. I mean, I know it's influential everywhere.
But it's very, very, very influential here.
Everything. Yeah. So what do you think, and not to belabor this talk, but I think we've got a good conversation on it. If they both open, well, one's already open. If the other one opens, do you go UCLA or do you go Arizona?
You go UCLA because Arizona's always needed the right blend to work. Versus UCLA doesn't. UCLA doesn't need even like a great coach. Like Ben Howland's not a great coach. He's a very good coach. And I think he knows what he's doing. He's a very good college basketball coach. He's a good college basketball coach who can get the job done. But I think UCLA, less things need to come together. There's less alchemy there. Like Arizona, everyone can just drop off the bandwagon. Like look what Arizona was before Lute Olson and look what it's been after Lute Olson. You know?
Yeah, Arizona is going to be like an interesting test case. Obviously, Boeheim's had probably, I'd say Boeheim and Lute Olson are probably in the same like general tier. And Arizona's done well recently, but like I think they're in the same like kind of, we've had the same kind of success as Arizona. We were built on like one big time, you know, larger than life person. And I think generally you'd sign for what Sean Miller's done there outside of the NCAA concerns, but like he hasn't gotten over the hump yet. So I do think they're kind of an interesting roadmap for what we'll eventually have to deal with.
Yeah, I agree with that. Though I do think like our success is much more longer lasting than what Arizona's had.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and I think that like that's where I make the pivot to UCLA. I mean, said Arizona's recruiting when it's good has not been local kids that as much as it is kids from Southern California and kids from the surrounding areas out west. So I feel like, you know, in general, when you look at the Pac-12, it's rarely more than 1 or 2 teams at the top. And it's always been very cyclical. So I feel like if I'm betting on which of those two horses is the next up, I think that's UCLA.
All right. Fair enough. So, yeah, I'm going to Kentucky over Virginia.
Man, that was, you know what? That was a great conversation, though. That was much, like, as much as, like, we give this show some shit for being off topic, it was actually, like, It was actually an informative conversation. So
to be fair, I think now we're getting shut down full cast ads on our podcast. So very on brand.
Super on brand. Anyway, last up, the Midwest. I know we're well past halftime at this point. Tennessee's the 1, Michigan 2, Kansas 3, Nevada 4. Give me Tennessee in the top. Give me Louisville in the bottom. And I'm trying to avoid picking another 3 ACC team Final Four. So give me Tennessee. So I'm going to do the same exact Final Four that I had last week.
Yeah, that's what I was going to go with too, not to overlap too much. I do think, like, I'm not going to buy too much into the Tennessee-Kentucky game, although I wouldn't be surprised if they flop. I think Kentucky will very possibly end up as a 1 seed.
Yeah.
I think Tennessee rolls through any of those top. Seton Hall is interesting. Seton Hall can give people some trouble. I'm not buying Wisconsin. Nevada, I think they have a high ceiling, but I can't see them making a run through the tournament. Just based on how they've looked at some points this year. Kansas, I'm so far out on. Michigan just has been so mediocre recently. So that leaves Louisville. And Louisville hasn't looked great the last couple of games, but I feel better about them long term. That being said, like, if Michigan turns it around, I think they are the best team in the bottom. I just trust Louisville a bit more now. And I will also take Tennessee. I think Tennessee is very good.
Yeah. And then, with all that said, I will once again have a Duke-Kentucky final with Kentucky winning this time.
I'm going to take Duke to win again, but I think it'll be close, and I have the same final. I think we had close to the same Final Four. I think maybe it'll be interesting. I'll take LSU over Gonzaga, just so it makes you can take Gonzaga, which I know you don't like.
Yeah, that's fine. So anyway, we'll get to a little beer, and then we'll talk a little bit more Syracuse. There'll be some football, and we'll take some questions. But Dan, what have you been drinking?
A couple, not new, but a couple, like, you know, more interesting things recently. I had a Daily Dose IPA from Otter Creek. Where's Otter Creek? I know I've had stuff from them before. They are Middlebury, Vermont. Yeah, so one of the Vermont breweries. Quite good. I had a Pale Sour Ale from Omegang. Omegang, you know, always good. And then today I had, for one of the beers that, you know, you can find everywhere around here, but I feel like I have it, could have it forever or all the time, so I don't end up ordering it that much. And then I get it, and I'm always like, oh, yeah, this is great. The 18-watt IPA from Single Cut. Just one of their best things, and I had a can of it today. I'm like, oh, yeah, this is fantastic. I don't know why I don't get this, like, way more often.
Yeah, I have that issue with a lot of beers, unfortunately. For me, I went up to Pasadena and had a bunch of stuff at the Stone Tasting Room that's up there. Had the Stone Moxie Gold IPA. Had their White Ghost Berliner Weiss that I hadn't had. Also had, it was really good, their Kotika Rise and Grind Bourbon with New Guinea Coffee. That was super good. Also Brooklyn Brewery's out here now, so I had some Brooklyn Lager.
Yeah, they made a whole thing about that.
Yeah, it was pretty big.
Brooklyn's like one of those where, like, it's so abundant here, and, like, it seems kind of a boring order, but you did a Brooklyn Lager. You're like, oh, this is great. This is just a really strong baseline beer.
Yeah, it wasn't, like, you know, yeah, it's one of those things where, like, price point and everything else, like, it's good. I could probably find something comparable for the same price locally, but I thought, you know what, novelty, I haven't had the beer in a while. Let me have some. And then also had a Snuggle Bug from Smog City, so that was, it was a mostly stone-filled weekend, but headed down to San Diego this weekend, so I'll have much more to report.
And probably more Stone.
You know, I might go to Stone. I'm actually going to be nearby, so I might end up back over there. Who knows? But yeah, some other things. Some breaking news while we were on the podcast. Josh Jackson's going to Maryland, and he's eligible to play immediately.
Oh, that's interesting. And also not great.
It's not great, but at the same time, he's been injured for a while, and yep, we're going to face him in week 2.
Yeah, I guess that's the best time, like, roughly. Week 1 or week 2 is better to face him then, but would have rather had them not, like, have a... Although, is he, like, guaranteed to start there? They have, like, a million quarterbacks. They're all always hurt. I don't know who's staying, which is the problem. I don't know what Maryland's situation is, but, like, they've gotten decent quarterback play recently. It's just that they cycle through injuries so crazy, like, so often. But, like they have the guys who have beaten Texas who are, like, two different guys, and I know they had some talent there. So I don't even know if it's, like, a guarantee that he's going to step in and take that job.
Yeah, I think he ends up. I think that's why he's going, because he wants to. But yeah, you're right. He might not necessarily win that job.
If he transfers there and doesn't win the job when he probably would have won the job at Virginia Tech, would be like, I don't like to, you know, make fun of someone's decision, and obviously he thinks it's the right one for him. And like, I'm all for players transferring when it's the right thing for them. That would be a very questionable decision, honestly. But you know, all the power to him.
Yeah, I think we'll see. So yeah, that should be interesting. I'm sure we'll talk more about that when the season gets closer. Why don't we talk some of listeners' questions, since that was a hot topic? I know a bunch of people weighed in. Somebody asked, it was Rob Ackerman asked, what is Cuse's record since Jim threw his jacket at Duke? Well, the jacket toss tracker doesn't necessarily track that information. Also don't have a jacket toss at Duke. So I guess that is...
Unless he means like the famous one, in which case like... Oh. Look up the team's records. Look up the last couple of years.
And yeah, you'll find the result is mediocre. See some NCAA tournament runs. Other questions that we have. Okay, from Kevin Humphrey. Would scheduling Tulane be acceptable? Why don't we give a James Mungro statue on campus? Okay, these are separate questions. Would scheduling Tulane be acceptable? Yes, I think.
Yeah, we've done it.
Yeah, we've done it. I think it's fine to do it again. We're never really in the running for Louisiana recruits. That's fine. I think a 1-1's a little tough. I think a like 2-for-1's a little bit better in that scenario.
Better enough they're not in the dome, because that was, I wasn't there. I was supposed to do that game and had some circumstances in which case I had to cancel my trip to New Orleans. But it was pretty dreary looking. There was no one there. So now they have an on-campus stadium. I think it's a little more palatable to do like a 2-for-1, like you said. The problem with New Orleans or Louisiana is LSU is historically so good at keeping guys in state, and if they don't like clean up Louisiana, the top guys, which obviously wouldn't really be in the running for, have so many suitors that it's tough. There's not like a great. It's not like Florida where there's this great underclass, or even Georgia, of players who aren't staying in state. So it's not a great state to go recruit. Like the Midwestern ones are for us, like Georgia is for us, like Florida is for us. So right. I'd say there's less value than like, honestly, scheduling even like a Georgia Southern, but or a Georgia State. But I also think our schools share some pretty cool history in terms of the Katrina stuff. I always like playing private schools. So yeah, 2-for-1, which I think is what we did the last time, would be fine.
Yeah, I agree with that. Why don't we have a James Mungro statue on campus? I think there's too many statues sometimes, and I think that Mungro would be on a short list for a statue, but I also think the jersey retirements are just as good.
Yeah, I think Mungro's a good jersey statue. Statue, I think, should be like... I mean, we've talked about statues so much here because there's like... You know, there are a couple guys. Like, at some point, there will be a Jim Boeheim statue in all likelihood. I do think that... And I, Sean wrote about this a lot, like when the Davis statue was going up and discussions of other things. I do think you have to be very careful with them. You don't want to take a statue down. We saw that happen at Penn State. You want to be very, very sure that someone's legacy is secure when you put up a statue of them.
Agreed, agreed. Is it okay to have a Keystone Light once in a while to feel like I'm back in high school? If you want to feel like you're back in high school, there's a lot of other things you can do. If you really need to do that, great. But you know what? You can find like a light lager brewed by a local brewery, I'm sure, and support your local businesses.
Keystone's a bit much. Like, I don't have a major problem with people having, like, a Bud Light at a concert or something if that's all that's there.
Right. Which is a rarity like, at this point.
Yeah. No, most places are good about getting something better. But I've had Bud Lights in the last year, Coors Lights. I had a bunch of Miller Lite recently just because that's what I was in the mountains in North Carolina. That's what people were buying, so I wasn't going to, like, not drink it.
I just act like a bitch and make sure that we're not buying that. I'm that guy.
Yeah, I was flying there, so I had no, like, I didn't buy anything. So I couldn't really say, like, stop, go drive 30. Literally, we had to go drive, because we were apparently in a dry county. We had to, like, drive, like, 35 minutes to go get, like, more liquor after we ran out, like, 3 days in. So, yeah, it was not my, my place to complain. There was also craft stuff, so I was able to have some decent North Carolina beers as well. But when those ran out, like, I had some High Life, so I'm not gonna freak out about it.
Fair enough. What is your favorite beer brewed locally in Syracuse? That's from Matt Butler. Dan, I will let you go first.
So I haven't been to Syracuse in a bit. I'm hoping, and I plan to go to the Virginia game. I don't have tickets or anything, but that has been discussed. It's a Monday, so I can probably do it. Last time I did my big beer tour there, I was just looking through my Untappd. In terms of like actual hyper-local stuff, I have not been to Prison City yet. I know that's Auburn technically, but I think I would count that. I haven't been there, so I can't say it yet. I really love the Farmhouse IPA from Red Hawk. Middle Ages, I think, just makes really rock-solid stuff. The SPA is great. I like their apricot a lot. And then from Eastwood, they do a lot of darks. Their Dunkelweizen is really good. So I think those are probably my favorite, like, hyper-local. If you get a little bit more, and I know he said in Syracuse, so if you get a little bit more wide-ranging with Upstate, obviously Umba Gang, I'll drink anything from them. Going down to the Hudson Valley, Sloop Brewings, their bomb is great. Their juice bomb is great. Hudson Valley Brewing has some good stuff. Southern Tier over on in the Southern Tier, obviously the Pump King and a million other things. So a lot of great Upstate beers, but those first couple are probably my favorite, like, actual Syracuse beers.
Yeah, I think that's fair. On my end, fully acknowledging that I don't really have a ton of time to be in Syracuse to drink these things, Mass Riot from Prison City would be outside of Syracuse technically in Auburn, but that would be my pick. If you're looking at some other things, Eastwood C4 is a good one. Willow Rocks Brunch is another good one. If we want to extend things out a bit over to Binghamton, Galaxy's Andromeda IPA is a good one. I know Good Nature is nearby, and Good Nature Blonde is pretty good. Can't really go wrong just drinking a Syracuse Pale Ale from Middle Ages. There's a lot of great stuff. I would say that while Dan and I have some opinions, I would say if anyone wants real good opinions on Syracuse beer, hit up Steve Haller, who will be on site for the meetup on Saturday for the Duke game, which gets us to the next question from Andy. Andy, who asked, and not Andy Pregler, asked, is John going to be at the meetup on Saturday before the Duke game? And if not, why not? No, I will not be, because it is A, very expensive to get to Syracuse from Los Angeles, and B, I also have a four-month-old child, so neither of those things really allow me to get to a game like that. And he said that he came all the way from South Carolina to buy him a beer and see pictures of his dog on his actual phone. Maybe next time.
Yeah, I also will unfortunately not be there, but I, again, will hope to be there for the Virginia game. Probably won't be getting up to town until Sunday if I do it, maybe just Monday afternoon. So I will keep people updated on that if they want to grab a beer beforehand.
Yeah, people should definitely do that. People should definitely go to the event over at Wolf's Beer Garden from noon to four after you've gotten up for game day, after you've hopefully grabbed like an hour or two of sleep after game day. Head over to Wolf's.
Wolf's is awesome. I have been there multiple times, so do that for sure.
I haven't been to Wolf's, but I will take your word for it, and I will take Steve's word for it. Steve is a bartender over there, and we'll be helping out. We'll also be selling T-shirts and koozies. So if you're into, Noon's branded stuff, here you go. We're going to have some deals on koozies, on T-shirts. They are orange, so if you're going to the orange out, as it were, against Duke, you now have a shirt that doesn't say that it's cold out and sold out. Which it cold is a relative term when it's 44 degrees, as it's predicted to be that day. I think
that's balmy.
Yeah, that's warm out.
And, I would take that here today.
Warm out and swarm out, I guess. The new shirts would say. I don't really know why you'd go with that. We've discussed this before. I don't know why you'd go with this phrase.
It's not great, but.
It's regrettable, but you know what's not regrettable is buying a blog shirt, because we're not changing the name of the blog or the logo, and you can wear it all year and not just once a year.
Yes, and it's very you can wear it, you know, when the team's not doing well, and people will be like, oh yeah, that's the site where everyone gets really really upset in the comment section for 5 days at a time when the team loses, or things are going well and everyone's like, yeah, I read that site and the team is good.
You could also wear it when you're not facing Duke or when it's not cold out.
Yes, it is. It is for all weathers.
For all weathers, for all opponents, for every day of the year. We've got you covered. Dan, some quick predictions here. We'll do Louisville and Duke. Do you think we beat Louisville? And if so, by what score?
You know, I'm going to be optimistic. I say we will beat Louisville, because we're going to need to beat one of these teams. And Louisville's probably the most gettable one in these four big ranked games. So I'm going to go, yes, Syracuse will beat Louisville. I think it's going to be a nail-biter. I'm going to go 69-64.
Oh, I took my score. I also think that we're...
Really? How?
I don't know. We've been doing this long enough that we share a brain, I guess. That's horrifying to think about.
We saved the exact score?
Yeah, I had the exact score in my head.
Oh, Jesus.
We'll switch it up slightly. A kind of nice 69-66. I think that the Syracuse defense shows up even if the offense doesn't, and that we understand that we're not beating Duke, and I'll just skip ahead to that part where, we decide to make sure that we get a win out of this, keep it interesting, because if we don't, things are going to go downhill very quickly. And
it's not a dead. I think the teeth gnashing is in it pretty nasty if we lose this one.
We're losing to Duke.
Yeah.
Everyone needs to stop fooling themselves. I mean, believe me, I would love to be proven wrong here, but I'm not going to be proven wrong.
It would be so, like, we got our win against Duke. We can all be very happy about that and hope the next game is, like, pretty competitive and exciting.
Yeah, I think, you know what, like, there was a lot of hype and everything else leading into pretty much every Duke game. And there's certain teams that, like, you can convince yourself that a full-strength Syracuse team could beat a full-strength Duke team. This is not one of those years. So I'm going to err on the side of rationality and say that unfortunately Syracuse cannot get the job done against Duke.
Yeah, I'm going to, yeah. I can't find the universe in which we beat them twice. I welcome it. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, we are so far, I mean, in terms of this one series, we are so far ahead of everyone else. That's not named Gonzaga, in that we beat Duke once, that I'm going to be okay with that as long as we get one of these other big wins and get into the tournament.
Same. Virginia's also hanging out there, as is UNC. I think we'll end up talking UVA next time, probably. But we'll see. Hopefully when we have our next episode, we are dealing with an entirely new and better reality for the Orange and their at-large hopes.
Oh, yeah, we do have the UNC game before we talk again. I don't want to commit anything to that. I want to see the next two games first. So.
Yeah. I think if the next two games go horribly wrong, I have no faith in that game.
Tweet me Sunday morning and ask how I think we'll do it at UNC, and I'll let you know.
I think that's a good idea. Dan, anything else before we depart?
No. Excited for these two games. Staying positive. If we go 0-3, next podcast will be very interesting, but I'm hoping that is not the case.
Yeah, the Dreadcast is never a fun time, but again, hopefully we don't have to deal with that. Anyway, that was Dan. I'm John. Thank you, everybody, for listening to Syracuse Sports Make Me Drink from Troy Noon's and Absolute Podcast. You can rate, review, subscribe on iTunes. I think you can rate and review on Megaphone, the new podcast provider. I'm sure there are other services that we're showing up on. Not just
you
iTunes.
Just email them and tell us we're good. Tell them we're good.
Yeah, whatever. Just
email them and be like, this one podcast that's this, on your network.
This cast is good. You need to check it out. But yeah, do all of those things. Rate and review. It does help. I know we're one of the few Syracuse podcasts out there, so it's still nice to get the boost. And go Orange.
Go Orange.